Welcome to Slice of BI, where we take quick hot takes on the news whenever we feel like it. I'm your host, Matt, and with me is my co-host and Bonifacio fanboy, Borge.
Yeah, that's app. Okay. That's app. BI nyo, BI natin lahat, Borge here at your service.
And we are releasing this special Bonifacio Day Slice of BI, where we commemorate the 58th anniversary of his birth.
So it's
walang pasok ngayon. Kaya ano, we're celebrating Bonifacio Day. Now, of course, let's remind our listeners who Bonifacio is. Of course, he's one of our national heroes. He is the founder of the Katipunan, which eventually became the revolutionary government that fought for freedom against the Spanish Spanish regime. And of course, he has actually been made into an icon for a lot of people, you know, for specific people. Let me ask you, Borge, what is your relationship with Bonifacio? And clearly you and I I appreciate it, but in different ways. But who is Bonifacio for you?
Yeah, and who is Bonifacio for me? But you know, regarding him being an icon, I think we are part of the generation who saw the rise of Bonifacio as an icon, because he was not an icon when we were young. If you can remember, it was always Rizal. As Rizal is always on the limelight. But yes, I think when we were in undergrad until our other future studies. So Bonifacio slowly emerged as a primary figure in our national nation building project. And again, this is due in great part to more recent studies conducted by the likes of Dr. Zeo Salazar, his protege Xiao Chua, in popularizing Bonifacio's role. And you have Ambeto Campo giving more attention to Bonifacio. So we are in part of that generation who actually saw Bonifacio rise, or his personality rise, from you know, from being a secondary figure to Rizal, to an extent at this point an equal Rizal.
And in fact, to the point where he was even promoted. He used to share the 10 peso bill and 10 peso coin. But now he was promoted and replaced Emilio Aguinaldo at the 5 peso coin. Which, I don't know, do you think it's a promotion or a demotion? Because he has his own coin now instead of sharing it with Mabini.
Actually, it's just it was just Mabini during our time, 10 pesos. It has dinagdag siya eventually. But again, we see the changes in understanding Philippine politics. So again, Aguinaldo was subsequently vilified, highly criticized in recent years. And in his stead, Bonifacio was raised up as, you know, the thing is, Bonifacio during our youth, he is the poor man's hero. You know, that was his portrait, the great plebeian, which was an accolade given to him by the Americans and got stuck for decades and decades. So it was a great plebeian. But again, more research on Bonifacio's person, was actually a yuppie. So he's now the hero of yuppies right now. Young professionals who are coming more and more active.
To the point where he is named as the Yuppie Center is named after him, Bonifacio Global City, you know, the place where he urbanized, you know. It's weird. He's known as the plebeian, but now he's the label of like one of the ritziest place districts in our capital. Isn't that ironic? He gentrified.
He was gentrified. Kasalanan ni Ramos yan, you know, the business between Bonifacio Global City. But does it reduce his status as a plebeian? I don't think it does, you know. But there's a difference between being a plebeian as a class and having plebeian politics. So I think even if Bonifacio was not really a plebeian in a traditional sense, as a class, as a member of that class, it was certainly he was certainly employing plebeian politics. We're seeing Bonifacio now being absorbed by the middle class. But who is Bonifacio for me personally? You know, did I ever like Bonifacio before when I was young? I used to like Rizal, because again, he's the one being taught in schools. But my awareness of Bonifacio's role, I think I'm also a beneficiary of the popularization of Bonifacio, the slow gradual popularization. So I began to understand him more in undergrad. And him being portrayed not really as a poor, well, he is still a poor man's hero, but to see him more as a member of the middle class made me associate with him more to an extent.
Mm-hmm.
So, and of course, I studied his theories, his all of overall right. philosophies, understanding of sovereignty and so on.
Yeah.
And so yeah, and that's Bonifacio for me. He's to an extent a role model, one of my role models. Ikaw, yeah. What's your relationship with Bonifacio's mythos? Let's just say his mythos.
You know, honestly, it's almost similar to you because to you, like he's always been debated or pit up against Rizal, which is probably unfair, and we'll talk about that later. But no, he's normally contrasted as the violent, rash, passionate version compared to the cool, intellectual, polished Rizal. And the more that you look into their lives, the more that, well, number one, Rizal may have been elite. He graduated from Ateneo. He managed to go to Spain, but he lived a bohemian lifestyle. In fact, he had to save up a lot of money just to take a bath there, because taking a bath there's, you know, it costs a lot of money. Whereas, again, Bonifacio, he is known for having, well, iconography, again, he's normally portrayed as having a bolo and a camisa de chino, which is a shirt normally worn by farmers. But in reality, the only real photograph he had was wearing an Americana, like a businessman's suit. So it's quite, so their iconographies are becoming more ambiguous. You know, they're not quite poor or not quite elite, and yet they're put up against each other. And I suppose he is, for me, a mystery, but also because the key to that, once you get that mystery, you'll know precisely what how we should remember him. I know that we definitely should remember him, but I don't know how, precisely because I sense that Bonifacio has been, for the longest time, misremembered or
misunderstood.
Like misplaced in the Filipino pantheon of heroes. And I do believe that he belongs there, but I'm still trying to figure it out how, because again, you and I are reading the latest studies on it, and it's still quite confusing. And but definitely, it because of that misunderstanding, it has made me very, how do I put this lightly? It's made me frustrated, definitely, with the way that how, for example, the plebeians or the plebeian politicians, the activists have again co-opted and appropriated Bonifacio, when in fact he has been, you know, in fact he's a bit more complicated than that. You know, he is definitely an intellectual, and I think you and I both agree he's an organic intellectual.
Yep.
He wrote as much as Rizal, if not more than. He wrote also his fair share of poetry. He even translated Rizal's works in Tagalog. He was more of a and I would agree he was more of a Filipino intellectual than Rizal, who wrote. Rizal wrote mainly, he wrote in a lot of languages, but Rizal mainly wrote in Spanish. His best works were in Spanish. Bonifacio wrote in Tagalog and created the Tagalog Revolution. So he's definitely, I suppose, one could argue that he is more influential in Rizal in at least the Tagalog language and in the Tagalog political theory, which I think you and I would profit to read more closely.
Yeah.
In fact, one book we'd like to recommend in this holiday is to purchase Light of Liberty, compiled by Jim Richardson, which compiles all the documents of the Katipunan, which includes attendances and roles of membership, and of course his own documents, his own writings, you know, the laws of the and rules and regulations of the Katipunan, and his own poetry and his own speeches. So it's quite interesting. So I don't know. Okay, what do you think now about the misconception, or if ever, like, do you agree with that?
How to understand Bonifacio? But okay, first key thing, I think for our listeners who are still not yet familiar with this. First key thing to understand about Bonifacio is Tagalog for Bonifacio refers to everyone in the archipelago. So he...
Katagalugan.
Yeah, he actually wanted to find a name that is not, again, not the quote-unquote slave name. So same mentality, different name. So both Rizal and Bonifacio had a Filipino mentality, but Bonifacio called it Tagalog, so just to have a separate name. It's a clarification. Now, regarding... You know, that's one thing about Bonifacio, something that we must recognize is he is self-educated. And I think that is what separates him from Rizal, first and foremost. And I think that is what irked, you know, irked our colonial masters,
mm-hmm.
our American colonial masters, yeah. and their the local elites, because the local elites, they're formally educated.
Yeah.
Rizal was formally educated, and they could mm-hmm. not accept that Bonifacio was, they cannot accept the possibility or even the fact that Bonifacio was at par with Rizal in terms of thinking. Mm-hmm. If Bonifacio was, of course, self-educated and he
mm-hmm.
basically he read so much as he wrote. So, mm-hmm. and anyway, it's, they cannot accept that Bonifacio is an elite.
Mm.
That is, I think that is one elite. Thing. That is one
he
thing.
He is an
that,
elite.
Yeah. He is. He may be an educated elite. He's part of the educated elite. Self-educated,
Rizal
yes.
is an elite. Yeah,
Rizal okay. is an elite, but Bonifacio can also be part of the educated elite.
Mm.
Not formally educated. Self-educated, yes, but still an mm-hmm. elite. His background, to an extent, was relatively more comfortable in comparison to the ordinary Filipino. Mm. Relatively comparable, but not thoroughly, not thoroughly comfortable, of course. But he mm-hmm. suffered as much, okay, but not as much as the ordinary Filipino. So, he stands in between the poor and the wealthy. He stands in between the poor and the middle class. So mm-hmm. that is his position. And right. that's a position that is rare and unique. So
mm-hmm.
to appropriate Bonifacio as a representative of the lower class is a misrepresentation.
Mm-hmm.
But to call him as an elite that is equal to Rizal's position is also a misrepresentation. So
okay. I think he's more of in the middle.
Yeah. yeah, he has a unique position. He has a unique mm-hmm. position.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Honestly, you know what that tells me?
Hmm.
Is his class... honestly does not matter, you know. And to be honest, I usually, maybe you might disagree with me, but I usually suspect people who make class matter more than it does. I mean, of course, it contextualizes the kind of experience you have with the government and the world, but at the same time, that did not necessarily define who he was, you know. And he managed to recruit lawyers and fellow bodegueros, clerks, accountants. You'd see that in Jim Richardson's documents, that it's mostly, again, professionals, perhaps even, of course, the lower classes, definitely,
yeah,
you know, regular people, but nonetheless, he managed to unite them together with the sheer force of his writing and his oration, because I think you and I both know this, he's more of an actor, you know, he was a speech maker, and he was famous for saying, "Sugod mga kapatid," you know, and saying that the cry balintawak, you know, that which is one of the first demonstrations of Philippine independence, quote unquote, or like the cry for independence, and we should respect him for that. You know, to be honest, class does not matter. He united the middle and the lower classes.
Okay, I think my rejoinder to that is, it's not that class doesn't matter. It's just, if we are to perform class analysis on Bonifacio's case, it's not supposed to be top down. You know, we must categorize him in a class in accordance to what he and his fellows experience. So we cannot classify him based on, you know, from deductive mode of class analysis, which is you have a set of class, middle class, lower class,
yeah,
and then you apply it to Bonifacio, you try to make him fit in. No, class do matter, because Bonifacio, along with his contemporaries, the first, the founders of the Katipunan, they were exposed to certain things that the elites or the upper classes are not exposed to. Yet they're also exposed to certain things that the ordinary peasant, the ordinary worker in the Philippines is not exposed to. They're exposed to foreign works. They're exposed to the foreign market. They're exposed to foreign ideas. So class matters. So sorry about that. Class do matter, but what class they belong to, it's supposed to be determined by from where they came from, their shared experiences, but it's not supposed to be applied to them. Do you get the picture?
So, not really.
Okay. The usual analysis right now, or you again, I do not agree with appropriating Bonifacio in any of the classes. That's that's one thing.
Right.
But he forms along with his fellows like Jacinto, the other founders of Katipunan, they form a specific class. What that class, how can we name that class? Well, that depends. So they're still a shared they have shared experiences, they have similar positions in the economy, They have similar positions in politics. So they, it's a unique, we can call it middle class. You know, middle class can be used as an
it's a vague middle area.
Yeah, that's the point of a middle class.
No, I mean, Resin Mojares actually calls him like the middle of society, which is, again, it's, we would say that it's a combination of different classes, but I think what you're saying is it's a creation of a new class, which is hybrid of multiple classes, right?
Yeah, to an extent, yeah.
It's not as simple as the poor or the clerks or the young professionals. It's a creation of a class with a common set of experiences, but it's not necessarily translatable to, like, say, for example, the poor today or the middle class today.
Yeah. But you know, I'll say this one. Something to support your argument. Did Bonifacio have a class mentality? I think we need to read more about that, because as far as my own readings of him is concerned, he doesn't have a class mentality.
That is what...
It is a battle between...
foreigners.
The Tagalogs and foreigners. So it's hard to apply class analysis if the very objects, that the very people that you're trying to study don't have any notion of a class. It's mixed with them being natives and others being foreigners. But his angry, then again, his behavior during the Tejeros convention, does it indicate a sense of class consciousness?
Because his hot-headedness was associated with the lower classes. And again, I think Nick Joaquin, in his work, in his treatment of Bonifacio, says that it was snobbery that killed the revolution. It was snobbery that killed the Supremo, which I think he, as brilliant as he is, as much as I love him, he does fall into that trap of putting him as a plebeian. You know, he still follows that plebeian narrative. But I suppose we'll can go to later with his, with what I do support with Joaquin's treatment of Bonifacio, which is, I think, there are two things I want to raise before we wrap this up. Number one, we celebrate his birthday and not his death day, precisely because he was killed by Aguinaldo's faction of the revolution. And that is unfortunate. And of course, it is one of the greatest tragedies of Philippine history. We don't really want to remember his death, but we remember his birthday, which is that he was born at all. So I suppose it's a consuelo.
It's not really a consuelo per se. We are in a system that tries to be something that it could no longer be because it started on the wrong foot. We are in a society that tries to be democratic when in fact our fate had been sealed the moment Bonifacio had been tried and executed. We could no longer be democratic after that. We just can't. And I'm saying this with confidence because I can compare Bonifacio with other cases
like
of popular leaders who of MSSD, most similar systems design. The difference between Bonifacio and Washington was that Washington, even if they don't like Washington, even if there were attempts to remove Washington from office, there were attempts to remove him from office, but they didn't. And they didn't go to the extent that they had Washington killed. The Americans, their democratic experiment started on the right foot.
Yeah.
Because they, even if there's resistance, Washington more or less. And Washington was also a loser in the battlefield, like Bonifacio. Both of them won certain engagements, but most of their battles were losing. So they have similarities. And so it's good for future inquiries to look at Bonifacio and Washington's case. So that's a most similar systems design. Now, Bonifacio may be similar with the Gracchus brothers in ancient Rome. The Gracchus brothers they tried to make the Roman Republic more Republican, but they ended up getting slaughtered by the mm-hmm. oligarchy. So mm-hmm. and after that, there were no longer any more attempts to make to reassert the republican nature of the Roman Republic. So the death of the Gracchus brothers ended up with the rise of mm-hmm. Julius Caesar,
mm-hmm. who also was killed by the Senate.
Yeah, well, also okay, but he more or less instituted the imperial path,
mm-hmm. right.
The autocratic path of Rome. So, yes, that's why we cannot celebrate Bonifacio's death, because mm-hmm. this society is still in denial that it could mm-hmm. no longer be democratic. I'll be as aggressive as that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. Well, that's a lot to say.
Yeah.
But yeah, there is this other thing, and perhaps it's to weigh in on what exactly he contributed. Mm-hmm. Like, while he contributed, again, an idea through his poetry and through his speeches of a nation. He's a father of our nation in that sense. Along with the result, perhaps. Ooh, two dads.
He's the father of the revolution. That's one thing that's for
father
sure.
Father of the revolution. Okay. He also, his political life was also rife with failure. You know, we know that in the convention, and he lost terribly. He lost his military battles. Not only that, but he also, according to Nick Mokin, he could describe him as a sorcerer's apprentice. He called the apprentice to the original sorcerer, who was Rizal. He said that Rizal was the original spark of the revolution, and he just tried to follow up and failed miserably, you know, because he didn't know the spell, which is sad. Oh, what can you react with?
I don't agree with that.
This is, of course, question with heroes. Huh? You agree?
I don't agree with that one.
You don't agree.
Dr. Zu, it's not only me. Dr. Zu Salazar's research on Bonifacio already notes that mm-hmm. Bonifacio was distinct from Rizal. Mm-hmm. At most, they came up with the idea simultaneously. Mm-hmm. Bonifacio contacting Rizal was, mm-hmm. was to an extent a strategic move. You know,
yeah.
It's a strategic move, but it's not a necessary one, because Bonifacio's mm-hmm. movement, the Katipunan, can exist without Rizal.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So it's not the Sorcerer's Apprentice thing. They did it in parallel terms. They learned to an extent from each other, mm-hmm. but Bonifacio is still distinct, so that Bonifacio's path could have existed even without Rizal. It would have been better. It would have been better mm-hmm. if Rizal would have been part of it.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I suppose Bonifacio had more of the political numbers, more than Rizal. You know, Rizal wasn't organized at all. He was simply a poet, literary figure rather than a political figure. Yeah. Quote unquote. Yeah. Well, of course, political content, but it was Bonifacio was an organizer. But ultimately, he still failed when he failed to, in a way, appease or compromise with the Cavite elite. And that's when he was double-crossed by Aguinaldo's faction.
You know? That's why that's why I said Bonifacio, even if he cannot be classified as a plebeian, he's a working-class man. That's one thing that's for sure. He's a working-class man. Mm-hmm. Even if it is questionable, he still practiced plebeian politics. So
in what sense is he an elite, but not in the same way as he the Cavite elite? You said he was an elite, right?
Yeah, a self-educated elite.
Self-educated elite.
So something in between the working class and the mm-hmm. uneducated working class and the educated mm-hmm. upper class. So he's right there in between.
Uh-huh. Right. So we've discussed a lot about, you know, his failures and, of course, his distinctness with Rizal and the way he has been misremembered. So you and I both agree that he's being misremembered. So how, therefore, should we remember Bonifacio, given what we've discussed and, in a way, what we are still yet to discover?
That's one thing. You know, regarding my previous statement that we could no longer be democratic, I can qualify that with another answer, which is, we can take our country to the right path if someone of the same stature as Bonifacio actually lives through a revolution. That's the only time that we can correct them. But until then, how can we remember Bonifacio? Simple. He's one of the first tragic figures in our history.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
One of the first. So the next would be Mabini. But I think Bonifacio's tragedy is a tragedy of tragedy had been repeated over and over again of selfish oligarchs hijacking a popular movement.
Right.
So that's basically his life in a nutshell. It's a microcosm of that tendency for selfish oligarchs to hijack a revolt.
Mm-hmm.
So he's a tragic figure, and he represents the tragedy of our politics.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. He's like a Caesar. Yeah. And the,
yung the tragedy na hindi agad siya umalma, na inibita mm-hmm. siya sa kawit.
Mm-hmm.
Tapos nung sa kainitan na saka lang siya nagreklamo. Yun yung tragedy mm-hmm. na called measure of naivete, you know.
Naivete.
Naivete, yeah. A bit of naivete regarding that one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He was gifted rhetorician, you know, rhetorical speeches. You know, he was a gifted poet. He was a gifted organizer. But at the end, he was a naive politician.
Yeah,
to an double-crossed. Extent. Yeah. And we should also learn from his failures, but also his triumphs. And of course, I want to respond to like how some people overplay certain aspects like of his, like him being working class, you know. Mm. I mean, he is working class, but not that working class. And he is somewhat of an elite, but not that much of an elite. You and I both established that. But what we can remember Bonifacio, of course, in the specific life, but also in some ways in how he is a part of the whole. And my one argument that I do want to uphold by Nick Joaquin, despite are tearing down his several misconceptions he had, was that Nick Joaquin, and if you look at Question of Heroes, which I will recommend again in this reading list, is that these heroes, like in the last chapter, there's one chapter that's one whole sentence, a very long sentence, one the longest sentence that that doesn't stop, doesn't break in the Philippine literature, and that shows Bonifacio is preceded by Rizal and is followed by Aguinaldo, who is followed by Luna, who is followed by Ricarte, etc., etc., which means that they are part of one whole movement. You know, he, in some ways, Bonifacio, at least what he argued, that while their movements are distinct, he probably would not have existed without the writings of Rizal, that it's initially inspired and influenced him, some people would say, Joaquin would argue. And in a way, even if he was betrayed by Bonifacio, by Aguinaldo, he was betrayed by Aguinaldo, but Aguinaldo rode his revolution for longer than his own life, you know, even years afterwards. So he is part of one whole movement that is very difficult to pinpoint make him better or maybe less significant. It's, again, we should probably see him as part of one whole movement, as what Nick Joaquin says, like as part of a pantheon, a specific, a unique part of a pantheon, but part of a long pantheon nonetheless. So it's good to see him with his unique contributions, but again, he benefited from predecessors, inherited the movement, but also left behind something, you know.
I think
even the Katipunan. Yeah.
I think what that's the thing. Anyway, I disagree with Nick Joaquin. I think what he benefited from would be the Gumbursas.
He does that too. Yeah.
The same event that triggered Rizal was the same event that triggered Bonifacio. But to say that Bonifacio learned from Rizal, I don't think so.
Well, no, but again, the point is he even included that actually the Gumbursa's death, and that's the point. Yeah, it's part of a whole chain of events. You know, it's not really a straight line. You know, but again, you can trace them.
Yeah, not really a chain of events, but let's just say overlapping narratives forming a whole story. So I don't like the linearity of Nick Joaquin's argument. There's no such thing as there's no genealogy of ideas in that time period. So it's more overlapping stories.
That's necessarily the point. Maybe I misrepresented it, but if you can read the last chapter, he's more of a literary point.
Yeah, that's
a
point.
It's symbolic. Yeah, but I think the main thesis is he's part of a movement that is beyond him. It preceded, there's actors that preceded him, and he inherited it, and it was succeeded from him. It was inherited from him, even by force.
Yeah.
So it's important to see him as part of that history rather than just a specific, you know, valorized, fetishized even part of it.
But is there value in fetishizing? I mean, they fetishized George Washington, and the value of that one is they need to establish an American identity, which is distinct. Only Washington and a few other people carried an American identity, while the rest of his contemporaries carried state identity. So Is there value in fetishizing the likes of Bonifacio?
That, well, Washington actually managed to survive and do legendary things. So there's value in that because he lived by example. Before Bonifacio was able to learn from his mistakes, he was prematurely killed. So it's different. But we'll see. You know, I mean, at least we still have to study. There's more to be studied. And we encourage our listeners to study on Bonifacio. In fact, we will recommend a reading list. The books that we mentioned here, of course, Question of Heroes, Light of Liberty. The book, did you mention?
I haven't mentioned this one, but regarding the left, to an extent, claiming Bonifacio. So the book is Salita ng Sandata, Bonifacio's legacies to the people's struggle. So one of the editors was the late Bienvenido Lumbera. So there are other editors, but he was one of the primary ones, the late Bienvenido Lumbera. So I think my recommendation, final one, is we need to, again, I would reaffirm what your argument that we need to look at Bonifacio as part of a larger movement.
Yeah.
But I think anyone who would like to study Bonifacio, they can start comparing him with other similar leaders. I already said Washington would be one. There are more tragic figures in other revolutions that one can, you can compare him with Sun Yat-sen, for the love of God. Sun Yat-sen's revolution was hijacked by Yuan Shikai. So you can compare, you need to, I think we need to at this point. I think we are at the point wherein we know who Bonifacio is. You know, we know who Bonifacio is. His value to our nation building, his value to our political thought, especially, and to our overall narrative, is something that we need to ground on comparative analysis.
Okay.
So that's my recommendation in practice. But for the book, Salita ng Sandata would be there.
Oh, there's one more book I want to recommend. Yeah, this is Inventing a Hero, the Posthumous Creation of Andres Bonifacio, which actually claims that what we know about Bonifacio has been based on faulty historical sources. So in other words, I think this can salivate historical scholars here, because while it's controversial, the statement is sacrilegious even. It just means that there's more to discover about Bonifacio, and that's more exciting. You know, maybe there's more evidence of that he is actually the father of our nation, if not more than the revolution, or at the very least, he did more for the revolution. So, yeah. So there's a lot to discover about Bonifacio. Yeah. It's not just about commemoration, but also in terms of study. And there's a lot of, we encourage you to read on him. There's a lot to learn about him.
And seriously, we need to compare him with other revolutionary leaders.
And that is our hefty slice. I think this is the 33 minute mark. It's almost a full episode, but
slice of empanada.
But yeah, so that is it for our Bonifacio Day special in our slice. If you have any other questions, please send us an email at pipodcastph@gmail.com. You may find us on YouTube, Spotify, and Anchor, and wherever you get your podcast. But until the next episode,
magandang gabi, mga kapiyay.